information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Appear to border
and it shows.
On
the law.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 135 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show. It's August 7th, 2009, and the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups don't get a day off. It's Obama-Saya, the Joker meme, and an unhappy birthday. 9/11 updates, infiltrations and dismissals, atomic anniversaries, Blackwater prints, anti-social networking, military exercises and secret evidence, killing hope, coups and Kim, FDIC, figureheads in the Fed, Squeaky Frome, and Shutter Island. That and so much more is all here. It's August 7th, 2009, episode 135 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Y'all be waiting for the simple life.
what you say. The only waiting for a simple life. Oh, he's burning, burning in the twilight. He's turning, turning to face us. He's burning, oh, fire in the twilight.
If you recognize that, you're a big nerd. Wang Chung, Fire in the Twilight. That's, of course, from the chase scene in The Breakfast Club. Now, we went over on the B-side on the previous episode about the death of famed director John Hughes behind, of course, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Pretty in Pink, 16 Candles, Weird Science, Breakfast Club, all those movies. And like I said, if you're anywhere close to my age, then those all kind of mean a lot to you. So I wanted to play something that hit that, and I sure as hell wasn't going to play Pretty in Pink or Don't You Forget About Me. So I went a little more obscure. So hopefully you'll recover from the Wang Chung. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 135th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's August 7th, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show. Coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com and 92.3 in Casper, Wyoming, blasting out 11 a.m. Mountain Time, RevereRadio.net, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. The fine folks at Free Radio Olympia, frolympia.org, 98.5 in Olympia, Washington, rebroadcast the show Saturday mornings at 8. 93.9 boulderfreeradio.com, 87.9 Ground Zero Radio in Canton, Georgia. And of course, always thanks to Glenn from right here in Portland at cascadiapublicradio.org. If they haven't been hit with a hack attack, you can hit me up on FaceSpace, TwitterTube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. Those are the best ways to hear and see and read and pass along and share and learn and argue. The downloads for the episodes creep ever higher every week, or at least the two ways that I can track downloads through Radio for All and Archive. We're just about hitting 200 each week, and I thank you big time for that. Keep sharing the show. Keep hitting me up on Facebook. I got people hitting me up on there I've never met before, said they stumbled onto the show on iTunes and love it, and printed out flyers and are hanging them up. I can't remember some of the names right now, or I'd call you out and thank you right now, but I can't, and there's too much. In keeping with too much, let's glance at Google News for this August 7th, 2009 morning. New guidelines address swine flu outbreak in the fall. They say we should keep the schools open. GOP Senator Mel Martinez tells supporters he is resigning from Florida. And we've also got the Twitter attacks left users feeling jittery and naked. And if that doesn't point to the prepping for a punch in the Facebook with some catalyzing and catastrophic I-9/11 event, as we've been talking about. And in many ways, we're ripe for the picking. What I want to hit first is something that's not yet posted to the page. Again, there's too much. I conducted an interview yesterday with writer, researcher, journalist Albert Lanier about the crisis in journalism and the new alternative media. The show is edited. I just haven't uploaded it and done all the post-HTML stuff that you thankfully are spared from. But to whet your appetite, let's listen to just a brief couple of minutes from my conversation with Albert Lanier.
But again, we see the rank hypocrisy of the mainstream media. And people wonder, well, why are you so critical of the mainstream media? It's just one issue. What has the 9/11 movement done to deserve their being called racist, being called insane, being called liars?
Nothing but being very persistent. And anything precisely that goes on too long in the media stage, and that is another ploy, I think, people get sick of it. I'm sick of those whatever it is this week. And they turn the channel and they're off to caring about something else.
Right, right, right. Again, the way these people, the 9/11 truthers, have been treated, and you contrast this with how the birthers have been treated. Oh, they're crazy, but not as crazy as the 9/11 people. And notice they're treated with a lot more respect than the 9/11 truth movement, right? You know why? Because these birthers are less of a threat than the 9/11 truth people. The 9/11 truth people are not just talking about 9/11. They're critiquing the state of American government. They're critiquing the state of the American media. That's why they're dangerous.
That's absolutely right. And it ultimately, I think, shows that, you know, a real anti-war on terror stance is, in a sense, a 9/11 truth stance. But we're not seeing that in the main line, you know, and where is the anti-war movement now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Notice when Obama got in, these people clammed up. Well, they're not criticizing the war in Afghanistan.
No.
The war in Iraq.
No.
Yeah. Even though Obama sent more people to Afghanistan, they're not saying anything. What happened, guys? What, cat got your tongue? Or is it the alternative media's got your tongue? Or mainstream media's got your tongue? I wonder.
So that brings us back around, because we've been on the truther and birther subject. But let's get back to essentially in what your points are on the crisis.
So let's get to the crisis of journalism. What is the crisis of journalism? It's the crisis that's affecting the state of the journalistic profession today. And I basically look at it in three component points. As I explained earlier, this is a crisis. I got the title from the Samuel Huntington white paper that was written in 1975. We also have the line that I use, borrowed slightly from Naomi Klein's book, The Shock Doctrine. I call this disaster journalism. There are three components: economics, technology, and news standards, or standards news.
And that's all I can give you. And that's not it, by far the best moment in our 90 plus minute interview. We talk about disaster journalism and News Incorporated and news entertainment and assimilation and alternative media and Star Trek and Simpsons and Dan Rather and all kinds of stuff. It's a great interview. It's going to be up very soon. And again, hopefully by the time most of you guys are listening to the show, it will be available. Interview with Albert Lanier on the crisis in journalism and the new alternative media. That segues us, because we were talking about the birthers and the truthers. It's time to wish you a very unhappy birthday, Obamasiah and the apostles of war. A lot to go over. Obama Joker posters popping up in Los Angeles. That's by way of newsbusters.org, newsbusters.org. But let's go into the tide of public opinion that may be turning against Obama. This from Danny Schechter, who we referenced again in the interview with Albert. New article from Danny Schechter on Global Research. The tide of public opinion may be turning against the president. Pollsters report growing skepticism about health care reform and more active hostility on racial matters, thanks to that uncalibrated expression of opinion on the arrest of Professor Gates in his own home. That remark turned him, in the eyes of some, from a small B black president to a militant Black Panther, or at least someone who can be bashed as such. These are the new controversial issues with no one right answer in a noisy debate everywhere, but something else is also going on. With Dems fussing among themselves With Obamacrats forced to rely on corporate media, the right-wing TV and radio stations close ranks behind the most self-righteously correct ranters, having a field day poking, prodding, pummeling, and peeing into cups of their own resentment, hate, and venom. There's no smear that's beneath them, no inference or insult out of bounds. Lou Dobbs blesses the birthers, while that Elmer Gantry of demagoguery, Glenn Beck, meditates on his mountain and pronounces Obama a racist. An Israeli settler refers to our president as that Arab, and worse. These are the nattering nabobs of negativity of our times, to resurrect an old canard once aimed at the left. That's, of course, from Spiro Agnew. The Yes We Can advocates seem to be taking refuge in the No We Won't center. The next thing you know, the removal of a democratically elected president that worked in Honduras might be attempted at home. Some of us are singing We Shall Overcome when our adversaries are chanting We Shall Overthrow. That piece goes on, but I think it gets into what I believe on many levels is the manufactured argument between us. So as long as we fight amongst us, we won't fight them. More criminally connected critters coming to the criminal cabinet. We've mentioned it before, but there's more from AugustReview.com. Trilateral member Robert Hormats nominated to the State Department. But all the news is going to be about Sotomayor, but let's not pay attention to the guys from the Trilateral Commission connected to Brzezinski and on and on and on. Isn't Poppy Bush a trilateral member, too? Obama considers military civilian prisons for suspected terrorists. This means you. The Obama administration is looking at creating a courtroom within a prison complex in the U.S. to house suspected terrorists, combining military and civilian detention facilities at a single maximum security prison, quotes the Associated Press. Administration officials said the new prison will be set up at a soon-to-be-shuttered state maximum security prison in Michigan and the military penitentiary at Fort Leavenworth, current home of Vibrant Response. You know, where they're just practicing what happens if a 10-kiloton nuke goes off. But more on the terror drills in a little bit. The AP reports that the courtroom within a prison complex will be for the 229 suspected Al-Qaeda, Taliban, and foreign fighters now jailed at Gitmo in Cuba. That is to say, the dirt farmers and cab drivers abducted and held in violation of international law for nearly a decade. As many as an estimated 170 of the detainees now in Guantanamo are unlikely to be prosecuted. Some are being held indefinitely because of government officials, or because government officials do not want to take the chance of seeing them acquitted in a trial. The rest are considered candidates for release, but the U.S. can't find foreign countries willing to take them. Almost all have yet to be charged with crimes. That's from the AP again. Fort Leavenworth Prison has a population of nearly 2,000 people with a capacity of 1,197. It's not explained if the current population, consisting largely of gang members from the likes of the Aryan Brotherhood, Bloods, Crips, and the El Rukans, will be moved in the prison dedicated to housing terrorists. The Standish Prison in Michigan holds 4,600 inmates. The Obama administration and the AP do not explain why two prisons with the capacity to hold nearly 7,000 prisoners are required. That is, unless they plan to abduct a few thousand more people. Since the false flag attacks of 9/11, the government has increasingly portrayed the terrorist threat as coming from white Al-Qaeda, consider the current case in North Carolina, and the right-wing extremists, as characterized by the Department of Homeland Stupidity. I call it homegrown errorism. The last quote from the AP, the facility would operate as a hybrid prison system jointly operated by the Justice Department, the military, and the Department of Homeland Security. Poll says majority of Republicans are birthers, says Fake Left Foundation Front ThinkProgress.org. Fanning the flames of town halls gone wild. And more from Politico. Congress critters going home to angry constituents, screaming constituents, protesters dragged out by the cops, congressmen fearful for their safety. Welcome to the new town hall style meeting. The once staid forum that is rapidly turning into a house of horrors for members of Congress. On the eve of the August recess, members are reporting meetings that have gone terribly awry, marked by angry, sign-carrying mobs and disruptive behavior. In at least one case, a congressman has stopped holding town hall events because the situation has spiraled so far out of control. Bill Maher has an op-ed saying those birthers must be stopped. Oh, but then we have the latest purported Kenyan Obama birth certificate. And Orly Tates. I've mentioned her before. Unfortunately, we're going to mention her again. But fortunately for you, let's hear an MSNBC piece. And again, we're not going to try and spend too much time on the birther meme. But here is Orly Tates speaking out for the birthers on MSNBC.
Hey, Tamron, good to be back. I'm David Schuster, live in Washington. Tomorrow is Barack Obama's 48th birthday, and the birthers may think they have a surprise present. Conservative activists bombarded many of us in the media over the weekend with Twitter messages and emails claiming they had the smoking gun. But in our big picture, the Kenyan birth certificate they pointed to is forgery. And even some Republicans say the birther movement is making itself look ridiculous yet again. First, the background. California attorney and birther movement leader Orly Tates released this document over the weekend and claimed it is a copy of a Kenyan birth certificate with Barack Obama's name on it. Tates also filed a motion in federal court to compel the government to authenticate the document. The alleged certificate lists the president's birthday as August 4th, 1961, and yes, tomorrow is his 48th birthday. The document also lists the hospital of birth as Coast General Hospital Mombasa in the Republic of Kenya. No doctor is listed, but the document appears to bear the signature of the deputy registrar of Coast Province. Furthermore, it was allegedly issued as a certified copy of the original on February 17th, 1964. That, however, should have been the first clue that something was amiss. You see, Kenya didn't become a republic until December of 1964. Secondly, when Mr. Obama was born in 1961, the city of Mombasa belonged to Zanzibar, so if he really had been born in Mombasa, it would be a Zanzibar document. Third, Mr. Obama's father lived in a village closer to Nairobi, not Mombasa. Then there are the other clues that should have tipped off the birthers they were being punked. Check out the certificate number, 47044. 47 is Obama's age when he became president, followed by the letter O, not a zero, followed by 44. He is the 44th president. Despite all of this and the proof already in Hawaii showing Mr. Obama was born there, this is not the first time the birthers have been had. Just last week, another fake Kenyan birth certificate made the rounds and was embraced by some conservative websites. And even Karl Rove, who has refused to criticize the birther, says this latest document posted on right-wing sites is also likely a forgery. This alleged birth certificate that supposedly, at least according to birthers, shows President Obama was born in Kenya. And joining us now from Tel Aviv is Orly Tates. She's the attorney for the birther movement who just released this document. Orly, we went through and explained all the things that are wrong about the document, but I want to start with something else, and that is, first of all, the birth announcement in Hawaii. There were two of them, August 13th in the Honolulu Advertiser, August 14th in the Hawaii Star Bulletin, announcing the birth of Barack Obama. How could these birth announcements have been fabricated 48
Absolutely.
Years before President Obama possibly took office?
Absolutely.
How would they have the foresight to know that?
Let me. Okay. I just need to know how much time do I have. I had bad experience in CNN with Kip Pilgrim where
well,
she
Well, if you'll just answer my question, we'll give you plenty of time. But answer the question.
Respond. Okay.
Fine,
okay.
But answer the question
okay.
about...
Okay. In Hawaii, the way announcements were made in the newspapers, they had two types of birth certificates, and that's why we're demanding to see the original. One was a proper birth certificate from the hospital. Another was a birth certificate issued based on a statement of one relative only. It could be a grandmother or a mother.
That's fine,
just
but Orly, you haven't answered my question.
Statement.
You haven't answered the question. What would
I
be the motivation?
If you
what would,
to,
Orly,
give
what
me,
would be
give
the motivation for Barack Obama's family?
If you're talking...
Does that sound like someone that's even remotely credible to you? And of course, the red flags go up when it's like, oh, live via Tel Aviv, Israel. Again, my feeling is that whatever the quote-unquote truth is about the birther issue, cover-up, PSYOP, race war provocation, or some mix of those and other things, Orly Tates is most likely a wrecker, a shill who gets out in front of an explosive issue and misdirects the info. Having said that, if it does come out that Obama's illegitimate, we'll race headlong to change the Constitution overnight, and then it's, hello, Arnold. Or, wait, not so fast. The Deutsche Press Agency has from hero to zero. Schwarzenegger hits all-time low in polls. And he ain't the only one. But first, a bunch of updates on the Obamasiah and his unhappy birthday. Obama visits White House press room on his birthday. He actually shares a birthday with Helen Thomas, and he surprises the press room and comes in with a birthday cake and singing, and it's all very cute and very nice and would be really sweet if things weren't so dire. A funny clip, Jon Stewart says the media gave Obama a pass on his 48th birthday hoax. Soros-funded blog, that's Think Progress again, attempts to malign opposition to Obamacare. Again, smearing the alternative media that isn't as part of the juiced-in, connected, foundation-funded left. But now an interesting clip, and I'll have more to say about this after it's over. But this returns to how we began, and that is the Joker Obama posters popping up all over the place. A clip from CNN. Obama transformed into the Joker, but CNN says not everyone is laughing.
In the words of the Joker,
why so serious?
You'd look serious, too, if you were the President of the United States being portrayed as the Joker.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness.
Goodness and the Joker don't usually go together, but on conservative websites, this image is the latest thing. Someone took Time Magazine's cover and transformed it. Hope was changed to joke. The image is making its way onto T-shirts and onto a few posters alongside a highway ramp in L.A., accompanied by the word socialism. The image got Rush Limbaugh's attention.
It's becoming cool to make fun of Obama.
Maybe not quite so much in New York City.
Yucky.
Extremely disturbing.
Stupid.
Seems kind of childish.
Whether you like the guy or not, you still don't do that to anybody.
Shame on them.
Shame doesn't seem to be inhibiting critics.
Bravo, Mr. President. Bravo.
The White House had no comment on the Joker image. But what do the Joker and socialism have to do with one another anyway? Writer and Joker fan Robert Daugherty points out that the Joker supports anarchy.
I think if you're going to call Obama a socialist and then compare him to an anarchist, I think that undercuts your point.
The only sensible way to live in this world is without rules.
Obama critics could counter that the president and the Joker tend to give away money.
Hubba, 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 money, 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 who do you trust?
To cash in, the website Hero Builders plans to sell an Obama Joker action figure for $50 a piece. For some, the image is downright disturbing.
I think I do have a problem with the white face. Makes me think of blackface.
Back when President Bush was in office, he got the Joker treatment. So did Hillary Clinton. But when it comes to the current president...
It's a right-wing spin, it's disgraceful, and you shouldn't even bring any attention to it. Have a nice day. Bye.
According to the Obama socialism wall clock, maybe it's time to give the Joker joke a rest. Ginny Mo, CNN. New York.
Now, my friends, that maniacal laughter you hear at the end of that clip is taken from a YouTube video that they cut to a few times. The first time you hear it is when he says, "Well done, Mr. President." That is none other than Michael Goodspeed, who appeared along with myself on the most recent episode of Clyde Lewis and the Ground Zero Lounge, The Dark Side of Conspiracy. Again, so much going on. I did the interview with Albert Lanier, but I don't have it posted up yet. I was on the Ground Zero Lounge as a guest. I think made some good points. Hopefully I didn't have too many Hefeweizens beforehand. But I don't have a clip of that yet, so I haven't listened to it, so I can't offer it up to you. But again, things are moving. Trying to spread the word. If you can help me spread the word, we'll spread it. Obama as Joker explained. That's from InfoWars, and there's more floating around about that and just the meme of the trickster. Again, that Clyde Lewis went into in great detail on the Michael Jackson episode. Obama plans to use more than bombs and bullets to fight terrorism. That's from the Washington Post. Former copyright lobbyist is Obama's top pick for U.S. attorney. That's from Raw Story. That's from the guy who said he wasn't going to have any lobbyists. Freshman Democrat lawmaker physically assaulted at a local event by activists, raising the stakes. And of course, that comes from Think Progress, stoking the fire. It's not left versus right. Remember, it's the state versus you. Obama's dissident database could be secret and permanent. That's from WashingtonExaminer.com. So the update on this latest Kenyan birth certificate, if we hop to WashingtonIndependent.com, Punkin' the Birthers, priceless. It goes into the photos. And then other photos were released of the people setting up the stunt, and it was done by an Obama supporter. And I think that pretty much sums it up and kind of shows how lightly we should be treading on some of this. Again, the birther issue is like the controlled demolition issue. If that's your sole point, you ain't gonna spread 9/11 truth or Obama truth. And as a footnote, again, big things we could spend a lot more time on, but we're not gonna. Senate confirms Sonia Sotomayor, the first Hispanic woman to the Supreme Court. And the last note on Obamasiah and the Apostles of War, unhappy birthday, Obama approval ratings sink to 50%, says a poll by way of Raw Story. Again, the mirror of the summer of 2001. With a floundering new administration, besieged my problems that seemed to keep them off topic and off message. But then, lo and behold, a catalyzing and catastrophic event happens, and everyone snaps to attention. The plans are in place. They just have to be rubber-stamped by a corrupt Congress and make sure that you are paying attention to American Idol. And that's how you participate in your own manipulation. So I've evoked 9/11, and let's go into the updates. Sybil Edmonds' infiltrations and dismissals. First, from Against All Enemies. Bombshell from Sybil Edmonds. Bin Laden worked for the U.S. until 9/11. Former FBI translator Sybil Edmonds dropped a bombshell on the Mike Malloy radio show, which was being guest hosted by Brad Freeman of bradblog.com. All the audio and the partial transcripts are posted up for you. We don't have time for it, but it's there. In the interview, Sybil says that the U.S. maintained intimate relations with Bin Laden and the Taliban, quote, all the way until that day of September 11. These intimate relations included using Bin Laden for operations in Central Asia, including Xinjiang, China. These ops involved using Al-Qaeda and the Taliban in the same manner, quote, as we did during the Afghan and Soviet conflict, that is, fighting enemies via proxies. As Sybil Edmonds has previously described, and as she reiterates in this latest interview, this process involved using Turkey with assistance from, quote, actors from Pakistan and Afghanistan and Saudi Arabia as a proxy, which in turn used Bin Laden and the Taliban and others as a proxy terrorist army. It's also sometimes called Let's You and Him Fight. Playing both ends against the middle. And that's how a game is played on the grand chessboard. A couple flashbacks, or rather one flashback and one update. going all the way back to March 2007. What if the FBI hired someone honest to look into 9/11? The answer is they did, and her name was Sybil Edmonds, and she's been gagged. However, the update from bradblog.com, Sybil Edmonds subpoenaed and is now set to break the gag order unless the DOJ intercedes. There's been a lot of back and forth about this gag order, and she wants to talk but can, or she won't, or in a way you want to just say, well, shit or get off the pot. New York journalist and poet Jerry Mazza speaks with Russia Today about 9/11, Iraq, and Afghanistan and the effects they've had on the American psyche.
She is sitting down with journalist and poet Jerry Mazza. Sir, thank you very much for sitting down with us.
You're very welcome.
Your book, State of Shock, is the first book ever written by an American poet dedicated fully to the events of 9/11. Why did you decide to write it?
Well, I think it wrote itself. I said, well, I think something is trying to channel its way through me, so I just kept writing. I ended up with about, I don't know, 80 pages of poems, and they still keep coming.
Do you think you could read us one of your poems dedicated to the events of September 11th?
Let me read you the opening poem, which is called 9/11 Tsunami. Crowds run before the wave of ash, concrete, asbestos, time bomb towers exploding, dreadlock clouds and nuclear mushroom forming, cutter charges flickering down, no floors pancaking, black smoke, fire mething, building collapse, 10-second free falls, speed of gravity, tower 7 pulled 8 hours later.
Why this topic?
Because I think it's central to everything that's happened in the last 9 years. 9/11 was the inciting incident of the war on terror. And I think, in essence, quite bluntly, that it was staged by the United States government. It's what they call a false flag event, where you do something and you blame it on your enemy and try to prove that they did it. But the evidence, if you sit down and think about it and study it and read about it, points to the fact that it was what we call an inside job. There was no inquiry as to who did it. All of a sudden, they pulled 12 pictures out. These were the 15 guys, supposedly, who did it. Now, if they had those pictures, why didn't they listen to all the warnings that they had for months before from practically every Western and Mideastern nation on Earth? People were warning them something's going to happen. But in fact, stories were suppressed, whistleblowers were silenced.
And he's exactly right. Jerry Mazza talking to Russia Today. 9/11 is the inciting incident, the catalyzing event over the last 8 years. Everything that's happening, every injustice here and abroad that you tacitly go along with is based, for the most part, on 9/11. Moving down the updates from the New York Post, a fading memory. Scientists helping to ease and erase bad memories of 9/11. Eternal sunshine of the spotless mind, indeed. Hopping across the pond, MI5 says it was infiltrated by Al-Qaeda. This from Kurt Nemo. Sky News, which is the British version of Fox News, expects us to believe Al-Qaeda infiltrated MI5, the British Secret Service agency. Patrick Mercer, a conservative member of parliament, is demanding a probe into claims six Muslims were thrown out of MI5 because of concerns about their past. Two of the six allegedly attended Al-Qaeda training camps in Pakistan, while the others had unexplained gaps of up to 3 months in their resumes. It said MI5 had mistakenly recruited the Al-Qaeda members, and they were uncovered during the vetting process. In the amazing three-part film, The Power of Nightmares, top CIA officials admit that Al-Qaeda does not exist as advertised. It was created to scare the sheep into surrendering their rights and accepting a police state. And much, much more. New York judge dismisses claim that negligent construction contributed to the collapse of Building 7. And another thing that ties in with Building 7 is there was recently a botched building demolition. that some say reinforces the lies about Building 7. All that and so much more is there for you on the 9/11 update. Sybil Edmonds' infiltrations and dismissals. But it's nice now to get a little perspective on the false left-right paradigm. Or, if I can coin a new phrase, coming soon to a bumper sticker near you, no one died when Obama lied.
Time now for tonight's big number. Remember the poll last week where a majority of Republicans said either no or not sure when asked if President Obama was born in the U.S.? Well, here's a blast from the past, courtesy of Real Clear Politics. Back in 2007, 2 years ago, Rasmussen polled voters with a similar out-of-left-field question, asking whether they believed that then-President Bush, George W. Bush, had gotten the inside word that the World Trade Towers and the Pentagon were about to be hit on September 11, 2001. We're talking hard intel as to what was coming that day, how the hijackers were going to grab those planes and fly them into buildings. Well, how many Democrats said either yes, Bush knew, or that they weren't sure whether he knew about that? Not sure whether the president deliberately sat back while American cities were attacked and thousands were killed? Well, think about it. 61%, a majority, evidence that both parties hold the darkest of suspicions about the other party and its leaders. 61% of Democrats back in 07 said Bush either knew or might have known about 9/11 ahead of time. Tonight's scary big number.
If that doesn't help illuminate the phony left-right paradigm that you can see the flaws of the other party, but you can't see it in your own. You know, that's... Did we play something from Chris Matthews last week where he actually defended Ron Paul when his name was thrown into the truther, birther muck, and Chris Matthews defended him and said, no, he's got a lot of great libertarian ideas. But here he is, showing that a majority of Democrats said that Bush may have known about 9/11. Or they're not sure. Because now they're beating the horse that the majority of GOPers are birthers. If we stay focused on these partisan politics and the football issues, we're never going to break through. And that's, I think, essentially what 9/11 Truth gets to and what you heard Albert Laniere say in that clip that I played. It's a critique of the state and of much larger things. The birther issue doesn't get to the heart of the matter. Goldman Sachs and Brzezinski and the CFR and the trilateral connections and all the guys coming into the administration from Monsanto, that tells the story. That's the shit that you need to bring up with your Obama-loving friends. They can't deal with that stuff. And that's the real stuff. So as long as we're talking about polls, how about this one for an atomic anniversary? This is from the Associated Press. And it was put out by, and conducted rather, by the Quinnipiac University. A majority of Americans surveyed think dropping atomic bombs on Japan during World War II was the right thing to do. But support for that was weaker among Democrats, women, younger voters, and minority voters. This, again, according to the Quinnipiac University poll, with a link to the original poll for you. Released Tuesday, found 61%, there's that number again, of more than 2,400 American voters questioned think the U.S. did the right thing. 22% said it was wrong, 16 were undecided. The first bomb was dropped August 6th, 1945 on Hiroshima. An estimated 140,000 people were killed instantly or died within a few months. Tens of thousands of more died from radiation poisoning in the years following. 3 days later, on August 9th, 1945, another bomb was dropped on Nagasaki, killing about 80,000 people. Japan, of course, surrendered less than a week later, as they had already been trying to do prior to dropping the bomb. So
61% polled said that dropping the bomb was okay. And again, it's these kind of things that make us ripe for the picking. This is an issue that I went into in my spots on the recent Ground Zero Lounge episode. These divisive things that keep us bickering amongst ourselves. And it's all designed. It's all completely by design. Again, in my interview with Albert, we briefly touch on, but I didn't dive into it to interrupt, but the setup on TV, the sort of crossfire setup where you've got the guy from the left and the guy from the right. If you'll recall, several months ago, the obituary of Tom Braden, CIA Operation Mockingbird, creator of Crossfire. They set it up and sell it to you. Phony left, phony right. Pick your team. I like Hulk Hogan. I like Macho Man. Doesn't matter. I know most people know, even folks that aren't heavily into politics, I know I'm always heartened when somebody at work, when I maybe mention it, they'll mention Bill Hicks, you know. I think the puppet on the right is more to my belief. So I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a second. There's one guy holding both strings. Several times recently, we've discussed Jeremy Scahill and his scathing new critiques of the phony change agent in chief. But now, new revelations have him back to the topic that he perhaps knows best and that he is most definitely most associated with, and that is exposing Blackwater. Blackwater founder implicated in murder. Scahill says Blackwater Christian crusade a plus for Bush. Now we've got links to Jeremy Scahill's new article. It's on The Nation. Blackwater founder implicated in murder. The Nation's Jeremy Scahill comments on allegations made about Blackwater worldwide from two former employees who claim the company was used to murder, smuggle weapons, destroy evidence, and for wholesale corruption.
Joining me now, as promised, the contributor to The Nation magazine and author of Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army, Jeremy Scahill. Good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me back, Keith.
As horrific as all this sounds, it's just part of what you described in the piece today. Flesh it out for us.
Well, I mean, obviously, to hear the term murder and Blackwater in the same sentence is no great surprise, particularly to people who've been following the history of this company. It's been at the center of some of the worst violence in Iraq, killing civilians repeatedly. Five of its men are going to be tried on manslaughter charges for the Nisr Square massacre in Baghdad in September of 07. Another one pled guilty. The Congress is investigating. The IRS is investigating. This is a scandal-plagued company. What is explosive about what's happened here, and you just went through some of the most explosive of these details, is that you have two former Blackwater officials. I have learned from sources that John Doe, number two, was actually in Blackwater management and was privy to some of the inner workings of the company. Eric Prince, the owner of Blackwater, remains the sole owner of the company no matter that he stepped down as CEO and the founder of the company. He micromanaged every aspect of Blackwater's operations, and that's been well known. On the Christian supremacist angle, let's remember that Eric Prince viewed Blackwater as a neo-crusader force and has from the beginning. This is a guy who comes from one of the powerhouse families of the radical religious right. His father was a major bankroller and gave the seed money to Gary Bauer to start the Family Research Council. James Dobson focused on the family. And then we have his forces deployed in Iraq as part of a war against a Muslim nation that George Bush characterized as a crusade. What we have here, Keith, is a confirmation from insiders at Blackwater that, in fact, Eric Prince did have a neo-crusader agenda and, most explosively, may have murdered or facilitated the murder of individuals that were intending to or did cooperate in the federal government's criminal investigation of Blackwater. This is deadly serious.
Now, of course, Blackwater is now known as Z. That's X-E. But the corruption goes on. They've, of course, been called the Walmart of the private military industrial complex.
And we mentioned on the B-side about Walmart. They want to be first in line to be able to give you the coming untested vaccine that's going to be filled with squalene and thimerosal and perhaps some African green monkey genes. We went over all that disturbing news by way of natural news and some other places on the coming swine flu pandemic. But right now, we got to get back into the cyberspace war. Antisocial networking and the coming cybercom. As we mentioned in the news at the top, denial of service attack knocks Twitter offline yesterday. This by way of Epicenter on Wired. Twitter was shut down for hours Thursday morning by what it described as an ongoing denial of service attack, silencing millions of tweeters. It was the first major outage the service has suffered in months and possibly the first ever due to sabotage. The outage appeared to begin mid-morning Eastern time and affected users around the world. After about 3 hours, the service was coming back online in fits and starts. And of course, it brought up images of the fail whale. Twitter crashes, hackers to blame, asks Time. And to keep reiterating, this is what it's going to be about. This is prepping you. You give your all to Twitter and Facebook and your iDevices. So then when the punch comes, it's going to be a catastrophic and catalyzing event. Shall I illustrate this more? What's on the Pentagon's mind? Facebook, says the LA Times. Marines ban Twitter, MySpace, and Facebook. That's from Danger Room. Skype could be cut off for good over dispute. This is from the Times Online. And this doesn't seem to be anything more sinister than just an argument over the design and the copyright and the guts. Hopefully, nothing will happen to Skype because it's the great way to reach out, make a phone call, do an interview, record it, and then people can hear it. Blam. Google CEO resigns from the Apple board of directors. That's from the Washington Post, but from PC World, Apple and Google, collusion or sleeping with the enemy? We always need to realize, and I need to realize, and I need to say that, you know, as much as we rail against these monoliths of the web, they're what help us get the word out. I use a free Google blog. It's Blogspot. It's mediamonarchy.blogspot.com. I just bought the .com and the .org and point them there. That may have to change. From Federal Computer Week, White House cyber advisor Melissa Hathaway resigns. She was the sort of cyber czar midwife, if you will. Because we haven't appointed the real cyber czar for the coming cybercom. But there's an op-ed from Danger Room, cyber czar resigns, let's not replace her. White House struggles to fill cyber czar post. That's from the Associated Press. Observers ponder new cyber advisor. Again, Federal Computer Week. Desperately seeking cyber skills. CDT wants U.S. government to detail computer monitoring program. This from CIO.com. Obama's administration needs to answer several questions about the privacy implications of a new version of a computer intrusion detection system that can reportedly read email, said a privacy and civil rights advocacy group. What do you think is going to happen when you put the cybercom in the NSA? E-Verify could add biometrics. I've been tracking a lot of these articles from FCW.com, Federal Computer Week, because they're mundane, bureaucratic, businessy-looking articles, but they're basically about the quibbles going on in setting up your national ID and how you will be a trusted traveler and what documents will have RFID chips in them. Or, you know, what gates will have biometric face scanning, retina scanning cameras. UK Pentagon hacker and 9/11 truther Gary McKinnon loses his extradition appeals to avoid a trial in the U.S., accused of hacking into the Pentagon in 2001 and 2. I don't know the full scope, but as long as we're talking about the strangeness going on with the cyberspace war, that's essentially cyberspace, but also space. With the recent anniversary of the big moon landing, Buzz Aldrin was on C-SPAN recently, and, you know, he just happened to mention the monolith that's orbiting Mars.
We could visit other people with their habitation. We could keep track if there's something very important to be developed from the moon. I'm not sure what it is right now, and I sure think we should identify what it is for America to make such gross expenditures again for human habitation on the moon. We can help. We can join with. Together, we can explore the moon and develop the moon. We should go boldly where man has not gone before. Fly by the comets, visit asteroids, visit the moon of Mars. There's a monolith there, a very unusual structure on this little potato-shaped object that goes around Mars once in 7 hours. When people find out about that, they're going to say, who put that there? Who put that there? Well, the universe put it there. If you choose, God put it there.
Huh? Buzz Aldrin talking about, wait till people find out about the monolith orbiting Mars on one of its moons. We're being prepped for something, I would imagine. Probably ain't going to happen next week, but amazing nonetheless. Hundreds of ISPs refuse to go along with Big Brother spy system. That's taken place in the UK, and that's by way of Paul Joseph Watson. The last bit is a flashback to a video of Professor Lawrence Lessig, L-E-S-S-I-G. And if you'll recall my recent interview with James Corbett of Corbett Report on 9/11 and cyber terrorism, here is the clip in question of Lawrence Lessig talking about an I-9/11.
The 30-second version of the Citrain story is there's going to be an I-9/11 event, which doesn't mean an Al-Qaeda event. What it means is an event where the instability or the insecurity of the Internet becomes manifest, some major malicious event, which then inspires the government into a response. If you remember, after 9/11, the government dropped the Patriot Act within about 20 days, and it was passed. And the Patriot Act is huge. I remember somebody asking a Justice Department official, how do they write such a large statute so quickly? And, of course, the answer was, it's been sitting in Georgia Justice Department for the last 20 years waiting for the event that would allow them to drop it. And, of course, the Patriot Act is filled with all sorts of insanity about changing the way civil rights are not protected in the United States. So I had dinner with Richard Buck was at the table, and I said to him, is there an agreement? Is there a Patriot Act, an iPatriot Act, just sitting waiting for some substantial event for them to come and have an excuse for radically changing the way the Internet works? And he said, of course there is. And I swear this is what he said. And quote, Vint Cerf is not going to like it very much. So this is a big terror. Like, they're just sitting waiting for the inevitable to happen and then slam.
Waiting for the inevitable to happen and then slam. That clip is a little difficult to hear, but he's basically at a tech conference talking about legislation for an I-9/11, and he talked to Richard Clark, former counterterrorism advisor, Mr. Your government failed you. And he said, of course there's legislation waiting on the shelf for a catalyzing catastrophic cyber 9/11. A punch in the Facebook. We went over a lot last week. The drills. And of course, they're still going on. We're still soaking in it. We're in the middle of vibrant response. Trying to prevent a 10 kiloton nuke from going off by Fort Leavenworth in Kansas. Perhaps home of one of Obama's new prisons. So we've got the police state updates, drills, camps, exercises, and secret evidence. It's a long, ugly list of headlines, and perhaps we'll expand on ones that are the most important out of all these ridiculously important news pieces. Army National Guard recruiting FEMA camp internment resettlement specialists. Let's hop to Lee Rogers from RogueGovernment.com. The Army National Guard is now recruiting individuals to fill job positions described as an internment resettlement specialist, according to one of the job postings on Monster.com and other employment-based internet sites such as FreedomsPhoenix.com. There are links to both of these, and you can read, and you can apply to be an internment specialist. In other words, they're recruiting individuals to man facilities that could be used to house political dissidents, so-called terrorists, and other individuals that the government just doesn't like. The term resettlement indicates that individuals holding this job position could also be responsible for moving people to other locations against their will. It is a documented fact that the U.S. government has numerous facilities at their disposal that could easily be used to house large numbers of people. Combine that with this new job posting by the Army National Guard, and it seems as if the U.S. government is continuing to prepare for an eventful popular uprising. He goes on to break down the evidence of the infrastructure of what's going on. H.R. 645, the National Emergency Centers Establishment Act. KBR, given a government contract to build facilities to house illegals. World War II internment facilities, refurbished and maintained by executive order of George W. Bush. We, of course, also have Rex 84, Readiness Exercise 84, tied in with FEMA and continuity of government drills, the shadow government. Or if you'd like, you can read a PDF downloaded from army.mil about the Civilian Inmate Labor Program. And again, this is the documentation. You can show people the job postings. Job postings for internment specialists. And I'm sure they'll be very special. I'm sure they'll be highly skilled at pushing people around and feeling like a big man. 'Cause it's for America. Well, of course, we're now into our number two of episode 135 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's August 7th, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. Coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And again, thanks to the list of wonderful affiliates who help spread the Media Monarchy message. ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, FrOlympia.org, BoulderFreeRadio.com, Ground Zero Radio in Canton, Georgia, and CascadiaPublicRadio.org from right here in Portland, Oregon. Around the country, around the world. But let's get back to the police state updates. Drills, camps, exercises, and secret evidence. We hit the Lee Rogers Rogue Government report on the internment specialists. There is, of course, more from Kurt Nimmo. Oh, and even an update. The National Guard has posted a video about the job. There's also a long list of vibrant response info and rumors. And again, fortunately, a lot of people have been tracking this. Putting up clips, putting out tweets, watching the military practice to take over our cities. But there's other drills going on, too. Sim attack in Michigan teaches soldiers what to expect in Afghanirak. That's from Freep.com, Detroit Free Press. Drilled faux terrorists storm Lake Michigan cruise ship. That's from NBCChicago.com. But more from CBS2Chicago.com. The police and the FBI hold a drill military terror exercise on the downtown lakefront of Lake Michigan.
And you might be surprised by what you see. CBS2's Susan Carlson is live along the lakefront to explain what's happening out there. Hi, Susan.
Well, good morning, Roseanne. We've been watching a dramatic drill just slowly starting to unfold here at Navy Pier. You see the Odyssey cruise behind me. We have several dozen FBI and Chicago police officials which are on board right now. They will be staging a hijacking. There, right now we have a chopper above us and some police presence starting to form here. They're going to stage this whole hijacking. We'll show it to you in the next few minutes. Back to you.
Oh, goody. I can't wait for a staged hijack. Another staged hijacking. More on that anti-terrorism training on Lake Michigan from ChicagoBreakingNews.com. Police FBI hit Lake Michigan for training exercise. That's from WBBM780.com. And even more from ABC, FBI and CPD hold counter-terrorism training exercise. There's, you know, nice shots of the chopper's eye view of the ferry. Police in an FBI activity near Navy Pier Thursday should not alarm Chicagoans. It's just a training exercise. Operation Overwatch, I believe, is what folks are calling the eye-keeping on national-level exercise and vibrant response. Operation Overwatch, Palm Beach County, Florida, holds mock terror drills. Video and reporting by way of InfoWars. Northland, Kansas is home to a FEMA warehouse that stands ready. Ready to help in case of a disaster. If a disaster leaves emergency workers in the Midwest without supplies, help will arrive in the form of two tractor trailers full of equipment from Kansas City. A warehouse in Clay County is home to the Federal Emergency Management Agency's newest pre-positioned site. The ninth in the country and the only site in the Midwest. The facility stores emergency equipment that state and local agencies may need when responding to chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear incidents or natural disasters. And whatever else they're told to lock up. Nice photos of combat vehicles on the streets of Springfield, Illinois. Terrorism drill focuses on New York City area waters. This is from Newsday.com. Law enforcers on boats holding a terrorism drill south of the Verrazano Bridge. The goal is to protect the area from a potential dirty bomb or nuclear device. Homeland Security, NYPD, together at last. Drills, drills, drills everywhere. They're practicing to take over your cities. We went over the latest white Al-Qaeda terror bust in North Carolina, Daniel Patrick Boyd, last week, and it, of course, tied in with the beginning of Vibrant Response, which was to prevent terror attacks. Alleged North Carolina jihadist to be tried with secret evidence. Again from Kurt Nimmo. Again, the Associated Press reports that the supposed North Carolina terrorism suspects may be tried with secret evidence. The case may involve, quote, classified material that will raise national security issues if given to their defense attorneys. Secret evidence, secret trials, secret prisons. More from CNN, North Carolina terror suspects had arms, ammo, and an FBI playbook. Gee,
I wonder where they got that from. I wonder how long it'll be before we hear about the informant who just happened to fund them and rile them up and supply them with things and videotape them saying stupid things. That's America. Oh, but right here, Oregon Civil Air Patrol prepares for major United States Air Force evaluated exercise. This from Salem News. This week, that's this week that's ending, six specially equipped Civil Air Patrol Cessna 182 aircraft and approximately 75 adult and teenaged cadet ground support and air crew members from around the state will be tasked by a United States Air Force evaluation team to respond from their home base location to a multitude of realistic potential missions. These missions will involve search and rescue, disaster relief, and other emergency ops designed to test their capability to handle a wide variety of real-world potential incidents, such as earthquakes, floods, and tsunamis. The official United States Air Force evaluated statewide training exercise was held at the it starts today. Gosh, I'm so excited. Because there aren't enough planes and helicopters flying around day and night in Portland. It's going on at the Aurora State Airport August 7th through the 9th. I believe a couple weeks ago we briefly mentioned the reporting from Portland Indie Media about the planes flying around late at night, circling around, and someone called. They called the airport. The airport called someone else. They said, oh yeah, it's the military, and they said they're doing it. National Guard troops may be needed in troubled Alabama County. Alabama County may call troops to perform law enforcement. The implementation of martial law in America advanced a step further when the sheriff of Alabama's most populous county said he would probably have to bring in the National Guard to perform law enforcement duties due to budget cuts. Plans to slash $4.1 million from the budget of Sheriff Mike Hale by Jefferson County commissioners in order to head off a municipal bankruptcy filing were approved by Circuit Judge Joseph L. Buhacher. Quote, we will currently be looking at calling in the National Guard. This is, you know, in violation under the Posse Comitatus Act, which has, you know, pretty much been destroyed. The idea that the military doesn't do law enforcement. But that was until the day everything changed. It's not fascism when we do it. Possible National Guard deployment in Alabama, the result of the bankster scam. This goes a little deeper into it. And, of course, goes into the plans to slash 4.1 mil. This goes into the dirty dealings. And, of course, it involves J.P. Morgan, Lehman Brothers, Bank of America, and all your favorite gangster banksters. That's why the military will be cops, and the cops go be military. Mercenaries training U.S. local police, a new trend. This from Examiner.com. There are many police and law enforcement officials who are concerned with the growing trend of using military-experienced mercenaries to train and work with local police in the U.S., but there are many who believe the events of 9/11 dictate the need for this new paradigm. For example, Kentucky's Lexington Police Department contracted Blackwater Security International to provide what's described as homeland security training. Meanwhile, that city's mayor, Jim Newberry, and its chief of police, Anthony Beatty, refused free training provided by the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement federal program that prepares police officers to enforce immigration and border security as part of their duties. That's very funny. We don't want the free stuff about enforcing the laws. We want the expensive stuff about killing the Constitution. Oklahoma Fusion Center coordinator comments about national level exercise 09, which recently wrapped, as far as we know. That's from RedDirtReport.com, a good reporting out of Oklahoma.
But now we go to Australia. Australia files charges in terror probe. Australia is pretty much only behind the US, UK in the war of terror police state system. Three more men were charged Wednesday with conspiring to carry out a terrorist act on a military base, bringing the total to four, police in Victoria, Australia said. Police arrested them early Tuesday while executing 19 search warrants in nine Melbourne neighborhoods as part of the investigation into a group suspected of having ties to Al-Shabaab, a Somali insurgent group with links to Al-Qaeda. So that's Australia filing charges in the terror probe and getting into the action. But there's more from Australian TV about how the police foiled the suicide attack on a military base.
The raid was the outcome of a long-running surveillance campaign. It started off with a simple phone monitoring exercise. The police were keeping an eye on a Melbourne man from Lebanon known for his extremist views. And back in January, that man called a Somali contact seeking his assistance to help him travel to Somalia and join the Al-Shabaab group along with a group of friends. The police were already suspecting that there may have been illegal links between a few members of the Somali community in Melbourne and the Al-Shabaab group in Somalia, but until then they just couldn't put their finger on it, and that phone call provided them with a crucial lead. And traveling for the Lebanese man proved to be too complicated, and that's when the police, through electronic surveillance, realized the group had decided to turn their attention to carrying an attack on Australian soil.
The men are all Australian citizens. Is Australia Today asking questions over, well, its society and how minorities are treated?
No, of course not. They're not asking ridiculous questions like that, because Al-Qaeda's out to get us. Martial law under the cover of Bush-era quarantine regulations. I believe we've touched on this before, but it's worth hitting again. It didn't fly under Bush, but it might under Obama. Quote, the Obama administration is quietly dusting off an effort to impose new federal quarantine regulations, which were vigorously resisted by civil liberties organizations and the airline industry when the rules were first proposed by the Bush administration nearly 4 years ago. That's a quote from Politico. Fighting the same battles. Amish farmers lose court battle against RFID. This from theregister.co.uk. Michigan farmers have failed in their attempt to block the introduction of RFID tags for cattle, despite arguments about the cost and risk of upsetting an otherwise benevolent deity. The case was brought by the catchily named Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, representing small farmers in Michigan, as well as a group of six Amish farmers. The former concerned about the cost of the tags, while the latter were more worried about eternal damnation brought upon by applying numbers to God's own cattle. And they're both right. Congress proposed implanting airport workers with RFID chips. This is a new report on Truth News, but it blasts back to a news report from May 2007, which revealed high-level discussions, including debate in Congress, to require all airport employees to be subject to greater security measures, including a serious discussion of imposing implantable RFID chips into workers or subjecting them to biometric identification systems. All the flashbacks are there. Video reports, we the people will not be chipped.com. And it's up to you to say no. U.S. government, or rather, not yet, U.K. government to install surveillance cameras in private homes. The U.S. government is about to spend $700 million installing surveillance cameras inside the private homes of citizens to ensure that children go to bed on time, attend school, and eat proper meals. No, you aren't reading a passage from 1984, A Brave New World. This is Britain, 2009, a country which already has more surveillance cameras watching its population than the whole of Europe put together. This goes to a Daily Express article. So there's the source. Big Brother for real. government fines and harassment for refusal to answer intrusive survey questions coming soon, right at your door, if you will. 3 million Americans are being forced to answer intrusive questions about their private lives under the threat of home visits and fines by the government in the guise of the American Community Survey. The survey, which is sent to 3 million random homes each year, is in addition to the census, but demands far more invasive info from citizens, such as how many times they've been married, if they have a toilet that flushes, and how much is left outstanding on their mortgage. According to one North Texas resident, quote, the questionnaire also wants answers about where she works, how much money she makes, and what time she leaves for work each day, the hour and minute. I thought it was intrusive. I don't have a high regard for the federal government collecting this info anyway. You don't know what they're going to do with it. Why do they need to know this? They don't, in my opinion, the woman said, before stating that she thinks the personal questions are un-American. Do they really need to know if we have a mortgage and whether this house is free and clear? That's intrusive. The U.S. Census Bureau claims the survey helps them, quote, determine where to locate services and allocate resources. If the person refuses to respond to the survey or merely skips one of the questions, then the Census Bureau promises that they will be fined and harassed until they do so, a process that includes telephone calls and home visits. However, it's all hot air, as no one has ever been charged with a crime for refusing to answer the ACS survey, and indeed several members of Congress have denounced the invasive questions as a violation of the Right to Financial Privacy Act. On its very face, this is also a flagrant violation of the Fifth Amendment, that's of the U.S. Constitution. Any census form that goes beyond asking how many people live in the residence is a violation of the Fifth Amendment, and court cases have established this, yet the census becomes more and more invasive each time. Despite the fact that refusal to respond to the survey carries no ultimate penalty, the vast majority of the millions who receive it will doubtlessly comply in the face of threats of harassment and fines. Objections to the invasive info being demanded by the Gov in the form of the survey arrive on the back of similar concerns about the 2010 census itself, particularly, you know, how census workers are using global positioning systems to electronically tag every home in America. Link to Roanoke.com. In February, Obama moved control of the census out of the Department of Commerce and into the White House, a tactic slammed as a trick by Democrats to keep their majorities in Congress. That's the Gateway Pundit. Government fines and harassment if you refuse to answer the questions. Papers, please. The New York Times has an interesting and truthful article, U.S. Wiretapping of Limited Value. While the Bush admin had defended its program of wiretapping without warrants as a vital tool that saved lives, a new government review released last Friday said the government's effectiveness in fighting terrorism was unclear. This, of course, goes into our good friends at the NSA, FBI, CIA, and on and on and on. And it involves Ashcroft and Addington and John Yoo and George Tenet. Oh, but there's even a quote from Oregon Senator Ron Wyden. Quote, while former Bush administration officials continue to argue that their policies made the country safer, I believe this report shows that their obsession with secrecy and their refusal to accept oversight was actually harmful to U.S. national security, not to mention the privacy rights of law-abiding Americans. Ron Wyden isn't nearly as vocal as he could or should or needs to be. The last note on police state updates, drills, camps, exercises, and secret evidence. Los Angeles Police Chief William Bratton has announced his resignation, but he's going to take a job training police in developing nations. So watch out, developing nations. You're going to be developing a police state. Another posting, another list of ugly headlines. War whores, killing hope, sowing terror, torture tech, and force protect. Killer McChrystal has a new Afghan war strategy he's prepping. He's the new Afghan surge head. You know, of course, he was involved in the cover-up of the murder of Pat Tillman, so he gets promoted. That's how it works, gangsters. CIA Media War on Conspiracy Theorists, Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story is No Theory. That is from Huffington Post, if you can believe it, written by Elizabeth Gould. And it's got more about Dan Rather and Brzezinski. Civilian toll rising in Afghanistan, UN report says. That's again from the New York Times. Killing hope, sowing terror, the Assassination Bureau. This is from the Pakistan Daily, daily.pk. In June of 2009, Leon Panetta, the director of the U.S. Criminals in Action, CIA, the American Praetorian Guard guiding the course of the Dollar Area Empire, canceled a program to assassinate al-Qaeda leaders, which had been initiated by Darth Cheney in 2001 following 9/11, and which program Cheney had ordered to be kept secret from the Congress. Why make this cancellation public? And now? Because openly airing a few dirty underpants will distract simple short attention span minds from the unavoidable stench of much worse that is hiding under hasty burial. Did this program metastasize into a wider-ranging disease that consumed Benazir Bhutto and other foreign political leaders? The concept of a Phoenix program targeting al-Qaeda leaders reflects the banal inelegance and grandiose ambition of the small minds that devise our national intelligence schemes. That great piece from Pakistan Daily goes on. And you should learn more about Operation Phoenix. More innocents caught in Afghanistan's crossfire. That's just collateral damage. That's from Danger Room, as well as A Force in A Stan still dropping bombs. Christians largely mum on torture. This is from Consortium News, written by Ray McGovern. Anyone harboring doubts that the institutional church is riding shotgun for the system, even regarding heinous sin like torture, should be chastened by the results of a recent survey by the Pew Research Center. Torture can be justified. On to a little bit of the MilTech being brought to us by the private military-industrial complex contractors. Landing gadget could let drones see like pilots. That's, of course, from Danger Room, as is this one. CIA drone targeting tech revealed, al-Qaeda claims. American drone strikes are finding their targets in Pakistan through a series of infrared homing beacons, al-Qaeda alleges in a new online publication. Raytheon's rise in profits reflects new world order. Thanks, WashingtonTechnology.com, for again throwing new world order in our face. But more on Raytheon from Danger Room. Raytheon's Pain Ray has its first commercial sale looming. So again, we've joked that the so-called active denial system is coming to a demonstration near you, and it's not a joke anymore. SAIC awarded U.S. Air Force contract to provide worldwide force protection security services. Again, whether it's Blackwater or Raytheon or SAIC or Northrop Grumman or any of these guys, I know people that work for Northrop Grumman, and I have to stop myself from saying, what the fuck are you doing? You work for a company that makes things that kill people. That's all it does. Yeah, of course, Lockheed, you know, they also like to run your red light cameras, but they're dialing down the yellow so they can dial up the green. Still killing people for money. The U.S. wants to make a 30,000-pound bomb. This from news.com.au. Again, why do we always have to jump to foreign press to learn about our own domestic misdeeds? Heavier than the mother of all bombs, to be an ultra-large bunker buster. Pentagon wants to build a new 30,000-pound bomb that's 10 times more powerful than its predecessor. There's a nice photo gallery from Danger Room inside Alaska's answer to Area 51. And you know what that, kids, is? HARP. The High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. It's in Alaska, and some say it's a weather weapon at best, and a mind control weapon at worst. Think Tank says, China beats U.S. in simulated Taiwan air war, again from Danger Room, but lastly from our own Oregonian. Senator says Army failed to protect troops from deadly poison in Iraq. This ties in with folks out of Hillsboro, Oregon, filing suit, as we've noted people in West Virginia have done as well, against the deadly poison in Iraq. Gulf War syndrome doesn't exist. But now that we're gone international, it's time for geopolitics. Coups, Kim, anti-Semitism, and subs. The first report from Press TV, which is Iranian news. Government news, I believe. Just like the BBC. Or PBS. I first heard about this from Webster Tarpley on a recent appearance on the Alex Jones Show. The video is up of that conversation where they do talk about this failed coup, but they also go on to talk about the eugenics agenda that is involved with the people that Obama has brought into his czar cabinet, specifically John P. Holdren, eugenicists, forced abortions, population control, in his book Eco-Science. And then we've got guys from Monsanto and Goldman Sachs and copyright lobbyists and God knows what else. In Kingdom, Saudi Prince's coup fails. Saudi Prince Bandar bin Sultan, the kingdom's former ambassador to the United States, is reportedly under house arrest over a conspiracy against the monarch. Saad al-Faqih, head of the opposition group Islamic Reform Movement, told the Arab-language TV station Al Alam that Prince Bandar has been disappeared, and the media has published no word from the ex-diplomat's whereabouts since nearly 3 months ago. According to al-Faqih, the princes first disappeared in Britain, but he returned to the kingdom shortly afterwards. He added that after Saudi officials discovered that he had provoked 200 agents working for the Saudi Security Service to stage a coup against King Abdullah, he was put under house arrest. Al-Faqih said people close to the king had disclosed Bandar's plots and foiled them. He said Saudi sources believe that intelligence provided by some Arab countries helped the Saudi monarch foil Prince Bandar's conspiracy. Power struggle between members of the Saudi royal family has been common as power is shared among some 200 princes out of the estimated 7,000 family members. Known as Bandar Bush because of his close relations with former U.S. President George W. Bush, the prince is son of Crown Prince Sultan bin Abdul Aziz. Let's hit the link to historycommons.org and see a little bit more about Bandar bin Sultan, a.k.a. Bandar Bush. August 5th, 86, covert arms sales to Iraq nearly revealed. August 5th, 1990, Cheney secures permission for U.S. forces to attack Iraq from Saudi Arabia. Defense Secretary Cheney helps plan Iraq invasion. CIA Director Tenet has direct private channels to Saudi leaders. Former President Bush calls on Saudi Prince Bandar to educate his son on foreign affairs. That's going back to fall of 97. Former President George H.W. Bush calls on his longtime friend, Saudi Prince Bandar bin Sultan, and asks him to meet with his son, Texas Governor George W. Bush. April 98, alleged hijacker associate receives money from Saudi embassy. March 15th, 01, Bush tells Saudi prince that military action in Iraq needs to be decisive. That's March 15th, 2001. April 11th, 01, China returns crew of downed U.S. spy plane but keeps the plane. Saudis threaten to end their alliance with the U.S. Three 9/11 hijackers stay at same hotel as senior Saudi official, and on and on and on, thanks to historycommons.org. Again, the Webster Tarpley clip on this failed coup is linked up. But the other big things happen in the world of geopolitics when Bill met ill. Clinton gets journo's release from North Korea. This from the Associated Press. North Korean leader Kim Jong-il issued a special pardon, freeing two jailed American journalists after talks with former U.S. President Bill Clinton, North Korea's official news agency announced Wednesday. Clinton, who arrived in North Korea Tuesday on an unannounced visit, met with the reclusive and ailing Kim for talks described by Pyongyang as exhaustive. It was Kim's first meeting with a prominent Western figure since his reported stroke nearly a year ago. The release of Laura Ling and Yuna Lee, who were arrested March 17th near the China-North Korea border, was a sign of North Korea's humanitarian and peace-loving policy, so says the Korean Central News Agency. An interesting note from IsraelNationalNews.com. Larry Franklin, the guy I served coffee to in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, when he was serving as an adjunct professor at Shepherd College, he was then later convicted of giving secrets to AIPAC. Remember, that's the Weissman and Rosen case, the AIPAC spy case. Now, Larry Franklin, convict in the AIPAC spy case, alleges U.S. anti-Semitism. That's what it is. But in actions reminiscent of the Cold War, in what isn't really, U.S. monitoring Russian subs off the East Coast. This from the New York Times with links to the San Francisco Examiner and Reuters and Russia Today. A pair of nuclear-powered Russian attack submarines has been patrolling off the eastern seaboard of the United States in recent days, a rare mission that has raised concerns inside the Pentagon and intel agencies about a more assertive stance by the Russian military. The episode has echoes of the Cold War era when the United States and the Soviet Union regularly parked submarines off each other's coasts to steal military secrets, track the movements of their underwater fleets, and, of course, be poised for war.
Now, the Russian Navy says there's nothing unusual for its submarines to patrol international waters, including those off the U.S. coast. It follows a New York Times report that two Russian subs were spotted just 200 miles off the American coast. The Pentagon is reportedly concerned. It could point to more assertive Russian tactics. U.S. analysts say not since the Cold War have Russian submarines approached so close to America's coast. But officials in Moscow insist they have never stopped patrolling international waters.
Our Navy should not be idling its time away. And it's not only about fighting piracy or other international campaigns. So it's a normal process, and those who make statements are pretty well aware of that. We could also say a lot about their Navy and where it goes.
But we won't do that right now. The last note on geopolitics. Oh, it's kind of funny, isn't it? From DigitalJournal.com, late-night TV considered as population control tool in India. India's health minister pushes for electricity expansion into the country's villages, saying that late-night TV will make people fall asleep and curb procreation. Electricity delivered to remote Indian villages will help curb India's population explosion. At least this is the hope of India's health and family welfare minister, Ghulam Nabi Azad. Quote, since independence in 1947, the population has tripled to nearly 1.2 billion and now grows by 18 million every year. India is expected to surpass China as the world's most populous nation by 2028, and the population is predicted to top 1.5 billion by 2050. If there's electricity in every village, then people will watch TV till late at night and then fall asleep. They won't get a chance to produce children. That's interesting on a number of levels that we can't get into right now. India, should also be noted, has recently announced they want to roll out plans for ID cards for their billions of citizens. See how that goes. But as I reach in my wallet and there's nothing there, I realize it's time for EconoCrash updates. Fictitious, FDIC, figureheads, and the Fed. The first bit is a clip from Bloomberg that we're not going to play because it was a long clip and I couldn't find the pertinent moment where the guy on Bloomberg says that markets are manipulated and the volumes are fictitious. It's amazing sometimes how much truth you'll get on the really dry, boring financial talking head shows. Regulators shut down banks in Florida, New Jersey, Ohio, Oklahoma, and Illinois. That was last Friday. It's another Friday now, and I'm sure there'll be another swath of FDIC closures. But if you're keeping score, and I know you are, that's 69 so far for 2009. The Christian Science Monitor asking the question, could the Great Recession lead to a Great Revolution? For the first time in generations, people are challenging the view that a free market order, the system that dominates the globe today, is the destiny of all nations. The free market's uncanny ability to enrich the elite, coupled with its inability to soften the sharp experiences of staggering poverty, has pushed inequality to the breaking point. As a result, we live at an important historical juncture, one where alternatives to the world's neoliberal capitalism could emerge. Thus, it is particularly apt time to examine revolutionary movements that have periodically challenged dominant state and imperial power structures for the last 500 years. They, of course, go into the collapse of the Soviet Union, but also mention the American Revolution. And more that I can't wrap my brain around. I do find it interesting that you can tell that that article wasn't written by Reuters or AP. It was very flowery and wordy, and that's the Christian Science Monitor. Assuming you're a little bit smarter. And that's good to do. There's a video by way of ABC News and an article with Tiny Tim Geithner and him not ruling out new taxes for the middle class. Oh, you want more? How about Raw Story? Obama won't rule out new taxes. So we got Summers and Geithner, banksters par excellence, telling us that you're going to get taxed out the ass. Because somebody's got to pay the new snitch brigade we're putting together. And it's going to be your taxes. An interesting article that was on the front of the fashion and style section of the New York Times a couple of days ago. On the 2nd of August. It's called Rah Rah Resume. Alumni use old school ties to find work. And this, I think, kind of ties in with the report of the woman suing her college because she can't find work. But it's all about saving the RSS feeds to certain keywords that you want to see when they pop up in the news, whether that's 9/11 or JFK or, in this case, New World Order. If we jump down to the fifth paragraph in this, after they mention, of course, people that work for JPMorgan Chase... In the new world order of job searches, networking is everything. Again, throwing it in your face. Another poll. 3 in 4 Americans want a Federal Reserve audit. That's from digitaljournal.com. The issue that would not go away thanks to folks like Ron Paul and HR 1207. Audit the Fed. Audit the Fed. By way of WashingtonsBlog.com, a prominent financial writer says that the big money boys call all the shots, the president is a figurehead, and all politicians are mere pawns. This from longtime Market Watch writer Paul Farrell, with a link for you up to MarketWatch.com. Donations assure continued control behind an illusion of democracy where all politicians are mere pawns. Skip the happy talk. This depression is just a beginning. That's from informationclearinghouse.info. And the last note on the Econo crash, another clip from Russia Today. This is Adam Kokesh, who I believe was and is involved in Iraq Veterans Against the War. He's recently, I think, had his big old shit moment and has turned around and realized that it's bigger than left and right. The Federal Reserve is a government scheme, Adam Kokesh goes into in this Federal Reserve Russia Today clip. The last note, however, on Econo crash, for real, this is an update, but the United States Postal Service has reported a $2.4 billion quarterly loss. Our last two stories on this episode 135 can only be lumped together in what we have to call sinister forces. Squeaky Frome, another failed Gerald Ford assassin to be released from prison August 16th.
The very name Manson has become a metaphor for evil.
Madman or con man? Tonight, a closer look at the criminal mastermind, Charles Manson.
Very bright guy and very evil.
Is Charles Manson truly insane or a brilliant con man that attracted women to do his evil deeds?
The Charles Manson follower convicted of trying to assassinate President Ford is set to be released from prison in 11 days from now. Lynette Squeaky Fromm was 26 when she pointed a pistol at the president nearly 34 years ago. Mr. Ford wasn't hurt. Secret Service agents grabbed Fromm, who was sentenced to life in prison. Fromm, now 60, spent more than 30 years behind bars. She briefly escaped in 1987, saying she wanted to be closer to Manson. She's scheduled to be paroled in Texas August 16th.
It's been 40 years since the Manson family murder shocked the nation, and we still struggle to understand who Charles Manson is. What we do know, he's 74 years old, he's been married twice, has two sons, one from each wife, writes and performs music, stands only 5'2", and followed Scientology. But we still don't know what makes him tick. Are his wild antics an act? Or is he truly insane? Charles Manson, 40 years after the fear.
His latest mugshot is shockingly human. His eyes more tired than sinister, whose hair thin and gray. But the swastika still exposes the conniving killer he is, Charles Manson.
The very name Manson has become a metaphor for evil.
Like it or not, Vincent Bugliosi is forever attached to Manson. He's the man who eventually prosecuted and sent Manson and his band of followers to prison.
The district attorney's office and I personally and the Los Angeles Police Department are very, very pleased with the verdict. That goes without saying. We're all very, very happy.
In the 4 decades since Manson's conviction, his popularity has only grown thanks to bizarre interviews that have been shared by millions on sites like YouTube.
Tell anybody who hell you are. How do we on your heart?
That's what I think. I think, how rough you.
Anyone who knows Manson will tell you he's very, very intelligent. But the bottom line, he's just an evil, sophisticated con man, cleverly masquerading behind the common image of a hippie. Speaks in riddles. And you hear what he says, it doesn't make too much sense, and then you type it up. And there's usually some underlying message. And you have to be pretty bright to speak in a riddle. Very, very bright guy. And very evil.
I'm king, man. I run the underworld, guy. I decide who's does what and where they do it at. What am I going to run around and act like I'm some cheaty bopper somewhere for somebody else's money? I make the money, man. I roll the nickel. The game's mine. I deal the cards.
The Charles Manson follower convicted of attempting to assassinate President Gerald Ford is set to be released from a Texas federal prison later this month after serving more than 30 years behind bars. Lynette Squeaky Frome was a 26-year-old disciple of the cult murderer Charles Manson when she aimed a semi-automatic pistol at Ford in September 1975 in Sacramento, California. A Secret Service agent grabbed her and Ford was unhurt. The Federal Bureau of Prisons and the court-appointed attorney who represented Fromm at trial say the now 60-year-old is to be released from the Federal Medical Center Carswell in Fort Worth, Texas, on August 16th. The study of Charles Manson and the cults and the murders in the 60s, and the sinister forces is a deep, disturbing subject. And we heard in that clip, of course, Vincent Bugliosi, who we're all behind, you know, when he's talking about Manson or he's talking about indicting Bush for war crimes. But then he puts out something like Reclaiming History, his massive tome about the lone gunman Lee Harvey Oswald and the crazy kooks who dispute it. And we, of course, should mention that Tom Hanks and Bill Paxton are about to make the huge mistake of producing Reclaiming History and turning it into a miniseries documentary. Huge mistake. So we've rounded all the way back around. We began the B-side of 134, which I did earlier this morning, with the death of 80s teen flick director John Hughes. And we're going to end this episode with the trailer and a quick blurb about an upcoming film that you may not yet have heard about. And again, like a lot of things, you hear it first on MediaMonarchy.com. This film is still a few months away, but I recently saw the trailer before the disappointing Michael Mann film Public Enemies. Shutter Island from Martin Scorsese, starring, of course, his new De Niro, Leonardo DiCaprio. It only took me a few moments of watching this trailer before I thought, gee, I wonder who the bad guy's gonna be in Shutter Island.
Give you a briefing about the institution?
All I know is it's a mental hospital.
For the criminally insane.
We take only the most dangerous, damaged patients, ones no other hospital can manage.
You are hereby required to surrender your firearms.
We are duly appointed federal marshals.
But during your stay, you will obey protocol. Gentlemen, welcome to Shutter Island.
Marshal Daniels?
Doctor, so this female prisoner, Rachel Solando, escaped sometime in the last 24 hours.
Is she considered dangerous?
You could say that.
It's 11 miles to the nearest land and the water's freezing.
We don't know how she got out of her room.
Came back for a midnight round, she was gone.
It's as if she evaporated straight through the walls.
Who is 67?
There are a total of, what, 66 patients at this facility?
That is correct, yes.
Well, it seems to me Rachel Solando is suggesting that you have a 67th patient, Doctor. A lot of people know about this place, but no one will talk. You know, it's like they're scared of something.
You haven't taken any pills, have you? Seen any fucking nightmares lately, Marshal?
Pull yourself together, did you?
I've built something valuable here.
Don't you get it?
You're a rat in a maze.
Valuable things have a way of being misunderstood.
Who knows about this?
Everyone.
The nurses, the orderlies, they couldn't possibly know.
Everyone. You do understand that they can't let you leave.
Going somewhere?
You'll never leave this island.
Shutter Island. But CIA mind control is just fiction, right? Let's get the blurb on the book that's the basis for the film from HarperCollins.com. The basis for the motion picture, directed by Martin Scorsese and starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Shutter Island, that's S-H-U-T-T-E-R, Shutter Island, by New York Times bestselling author Dennis Lehane, is a gripping and atmospheric psychological thriller where nothing is quite what it seems. The New York Times called Shutter Island startlingly original. The Washington Post raved, brilliantly conceived and executed. A masterwork of suspense and surprise from the author of Mystic River and Gone, Baby Gone, Shutter Island carries the reader into a nightmare world of madness, mind control, and CIA Cold War paranoia, and is unlike anything you've ever read before. The year's 1954, U.S. Marshal Teddy Daniels and his new partner Chuck All have come to Shutter Island, home of Ashcliff Hospital for the criminally insane, to investigate the disappearance of a patient. Multiple murderess Rachel Solando is loose somewhere on this remote and barren island, despite having been kept in a locked cell under constant surveillance. As a killer hurricane bears relentlessly down on them, a strange case takes on even darker, more sinister shades, with hints of radical experimentation, horrifying surgeries, and lethal countermoves made in the cause of a covert shadow war. So yeah, who do you think the bad guy's gonna be in this movie? Now, I have linked up more for CIA mind control on Google Video, as well as just run the mind control search on historycommons.org. And they talk about, you know, Bin Laden and crazy X-Files stuff and, you know, the Guantanamo abuse, having a little fun playing mind control. There's a great PDF about the steps toward global mind control. More from Amazon, more from Powell's Books, more from IMDb, Shutter Island. CIA mind control is just fiction, right? So I'm sure it'll turn out he is a CIA doctor, but he went rogue. He wasn't actually a part of the CIA. You know, he was some kind of Kurtz in Apocalypse Now or Heart of Darkness. He wasn't doing what he was told to do. I guess we'll see. That, my friends, is going to do it for episode 135 of MediaMonarchy.com. But first, let's glance at the quick list of creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. I track my visitors, see who they are, where they're coming from, how they got there, and why. We had our aforementioned private military industrial complex contractors, Raytheon, company executive office out of Lexington, Massachusetts. We also had U.S. Central Command, U.S. CENTCOM out of Tampa, Florida. More than a couple times, visits from the Department of Homeland Security out of Springfield, Virginia. We also had the New York City Transit Authority, Marshall University out of Huntington, West Virginia. Radio France Internationale. We had the U.S. Department of State out of Washington, D.C. They were on my interview with former Marine Corps Major William Fox on the recent National Level Exercise 09 and the current Vibrant Response Terror Drills. I think it's a good thing to think that somebody at the Department of State is listening to my interview with William Fox from Ghost Troop. We also had the USMC, United States Marine Corps Network Operations Center out of Quantico. They were on my interview with Evan Long of the Columbine Calls. If you'll recall, that was my second interview conducted several months ago about the amazing documentary, The Columbine Calls. And again, you can kind of track, I can kind of see where the hits come from and track the ISPs and track the IP addresses and the dates and the timestamps. It looks like, I'm fairly certain, that these guys pass along information. Because you'll see it on one thing from the, like the next one, the Navy Network Information Center out of Alexandria. But then you'll see the Department of State reading it. and then back to a different location for the Navy Network Information Center. Sometimes it's Quantico, sometimes it's Alexandria, sometimes it's God knows where. More military contractors at Honeywell International out of Phoenix, Arizona, and again the United States Marine Corps, and again the Navy Network Information Center. So, if we know that they're practicing to take over our cities, you better friggin' believe that they're practicing to take over your face space. They're engaging the net as an enemy weapons system. And we'll fight back with what we have. We won't use guns, we won't use bombs, we use the one thing we've got more of, and that's our minds. That's going to do it, my friends. Episode 135, August 7th, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.